cooling pumping. Then it breaks out to come back to the weather, and then they always go out with it some little bright. You know, here's the how many times have we seen the story of the 100-something-year-old person who survived COVID, who's being brought out to the hospital, and they're clapping for him, and da-da-da, or the person who, you know, the dog story. That's always a dog story now. We get more damn dog stories, man. Every time you turn around, they found the dog, they lost the dog. The dog was a good dog. The dog was not so good, the dog. Yeah, but, you know, I love him anyway. But
well, people like those dog stories. I don't know why, but they like those dog stories.
But see, that's the problem. It's not wrong that people like dog stories. The problem is, well, if you're talking about the dog, you're not talking about something else, right? If you got it, if you formatted it every 5 times a week by 6, or the news, well, the 6 and 6:30, so that means by about 6:16 every 5 times a week, you want to have 1 minute dedicated to a dog story. And that's 5 minutes a week that you did not talk about the power outage going on. You did not talk about the story that I heard about the other, about the sentencing differences between Staten Island district attorney in Brooklyn and other boroughs when it comes to sentencing black youth for the same offense. We're not talking about that, but that's actually happening now. Nobody's talking about that. So when you format news and you're going, you know you're going to put a certain type of news in a certain place, that means you can't put other news there as well. All right. And that means there's less that actually can be covered because you're covering over type.
Well, let me interrupt you for 1 second, because the other day you said something that sounded really insightful to me. I even wrote it down. You said that in the news business, we never really appreciated how the mundane help us survive more than the spectacular. And I took that to mean you were talking about like the kind of stories that you focused on when you had the greatest damn job in journalism. Or did you mean something else?
Exactly. That's exactly right, Tom. Listen, you know, people want to know what happened around the corner, what happened in their neighborhood, what happened down the street. The reporters, we're in the room. We're like a football team, right? So, the tight end scored a touchdown. We all congratulate the tight end, and we all congratulate the team. But, you know, the linemen want to score a touchdown, too, right? So we kind of become this kind of competitive group, with a group that's competitive within itself. And I think we looked up when we should have looked even. I think I told you, when I was at Newsday, I remember having a New York Newsday, I remember having a conversation with one of the editors, and he was saying that, you know, New York Newsday was a startup, so they had to attract readers, and they were trying to get folks in. And he said that, but we are only going to distribute the paper in the high-end neighborhoods, the demographics that we can sell to advertise.
Right.
Now, I mean, think of that. So you're saying, you're coming in with the idea that some communities don't matter. Some communities don't matter as much as other communities, other than to cover the mayhem that happens in those communities. So that whole attitude means that you're distancing yourself from parts of the city that you're supposed to be covering. You're not taking those other parts of the city as seriously as certain parts of where your customers are. And it's a flawed philosophy. It's a flawed philosophy. And I think that's what we've had up till now. We still have that flawed philosophy. People, we're all alike. We just live in different ways in different places. But those of us in different places, if we were in those other places and had to live like those people have to live, we would be like those people too, because that's what happened. Environments and stimulus make you who you are, how you react to whatever. I think newspapers got away from too much. We got too far from it. Listen, when you think about it, we got too far from the people because there are 8.4 million people here. Surely we can find 600,000 who will read a paper every day. You know, but we can't. I mean, I don't know what the circulations are.
Right. Well, let's hope that, you know, the Daily News is still hanging by a string. It's up for sale, and there's a couple of guys who were vying to be the next owner. And the staff, by the way, just voted to join the newspaper guild again, which is astonishing to me.
Yes. Well, the guild, when we got out of the guild, was the stupidest thing we ever did because, listen, I say that to all the listeners, listen, 401ks are not the same as the pension. Go for the pension.
Tell me about it. All right. So before you go, I mean, we've only got, I forget, it's either 3 or 4 minutes to go yet. I get confused. But at any rate, you've also written a novel. It's a novel straight out of Brooklyn. It's called Gowanus, A Love Story. Is that your first? Is that what it was?
Yes. It's interesting. It is my first. My wife was very intimately involved with helping me get it done. She copy-edited it and sent it back to me over and over. We realized that it's like the first draft of a novel, so I'm going back in on it. And need to flesh it out. I think the premise is really interesting, and I think folks will find it very fascinating. I appreciate your mentioning it. But we're going to flesh it out as well to be a much larger novel, because I think it speaks to a lot. It has the potential to speak to a lot of what's going on, not only in this city, but in the country right now. It was fun. It was a long form and a lot of fun learning how to do it.
All right. Well, I would tell people that you can get a sneak peek at the book on Clem's website, which is clemrichardson.com. And you could also, you can order it on Amazon, but it's not done? I don't get it.
Oh, no, it's done. You can order it on Amazon. I'm just, like I said, that's the first iteration.
Yeah. And I can order it again to read it after you've made it even better.
Please do.
Well, I'd like to do that again. I mean, let me ask you, just as in the last couple seconds that we've got left here, I mean, do you tell people, I mean, I teach at a journalism school these days, and people always say, well, people are really going into the business. Do you encourage folks to go into the journalism business these days, Clem?
Yes, I still do. I think, it matters. This is a change of formatting. That's all. I mean, we always need to know. I think we're going to have to. The newspaper, the time of the physical newspaper holding in your hand and the ink on your hand. That's done. I mean, that's done. Our kids aren't. You've seen it. Your kids aren't. They aren't interested in buying newspapers and sitting and reading newspapers on the subway and all that kind of stuff. It's just not. That part of it's gone. But the delivery system is the only thing that's changed. And I think there will always be a need for people to know what's going on in their community, in their city, in their country, in their world. So there will always be a need for news. It's just changing how you go about delivering it. And that's where we are now. This is the transition period. The next period will be another golden age, I believe, of information, because there's so much we need to know, and somebody has to tell it.
All right. Somebody's got to tell it. All right. And Clem Richardson is a guy who told it very well for many years and is still telling it now. So I want to thank Clem very much for being here. It was a great show and a great wrap. And stay in touch.
And, definitely, man. I really enjoyed this time. Thanks so much for having me, man. I really enjoyed it.
I'm glad to do it. We're going to let Eddie Lockjaw Davis steal the last few moments of this show with Oliver Nelson's great Stolen Moments. Thanks again. Take care, everybody.
WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. We now go to the AWARE show that's already in progress. Good Morning Nueva York with King Downing will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.
Ourselves that way. Well, if you're judging yourself, if you're harsh on yourself, if you're telling yourself you're not good enough, if you're judging yourself for feeling feelings, that's going to create anxiety and depression. And most people never connect those feelings with how they're treating themselves.
Absolutely not. So we've had so much time to really tell ourselves that. And yet we wonder, it's the most obvious connection, but it's a hard habit to break. So now that we're alone and we see a lot more of our faults and a lot more of the things that we don't love, how do you jump to that? Oh, okay, all of a sudden I'm going to love myself with all this, you know, I'm going to get rid of self-judgment like that. I mean, it doesn't really work like that. No, there's got to be a bridge.
Right. And so that's where the six steps of inner bonding come in. So the first step is learning to move out of head focus, mind focus, and into body focus. We're actually born in body focus. Children, little kids are aware of their body and their feelings, but because many of us had too much pain, we learned to disconnect. We learned to go up in our head. Now we need to learn to get back into our body because that's where the feelings are. Now, a lot of people do know when they're feeling anxious or depressed, but they think that they're supposed to do something to get rid of those feelings.
Right. Right.
Like a child came to you anxious or depressed. A good parent wouldn't try and get rid of those. They would say, you know, what's going on? How can I help you? Is there something I'm doing? They would be interested. But we don't, most people have never learned to do that for themselves. They've never learned, if they're anxious, to say, how am I treating myself? What am I telling myself? What am I doing or not doing that's making me anxious? Am I putting pressure on myself? Am I judging myself? Am I telling myself I'm not good enough? Am I telling myself I got to be perfect? So it's a process of tuning in to our feelings and then opening to learning about what we're doing, not what's happening externally. It's so easy for people to say, well, I'm anxious because so-and-so is distant from me, or, you know, my partner's yelling at me, or, you know, whatever's going on externally. But it's internal. And so people need to learn to tune into those feelings and then tune into how they're treating themselves. People don't realize what it means to love themselves. So many people think that it's mostly on the physical level, like, you know we have to eat well or get enough exercise or take a bath or get our nails done or something like that. That's on the physical level. But most people have never learned to take emotional responsibility. And again, if you think about a child, they feel loved when you hear them, when you listen to them, when you're spending time with them. And so often when I work with somebody who's feeling anxious or depressed, and I ask them to go in and say how they're treating themselves and ask them to tune into what the feelings are saying. The feelings are saying, you don't listen to me. You don't know I'm here. You don't care about me. You're doing everything you can to shove me away. You're judging me all the time. And so we treat ourselves, like I said, the ways that we were treated. And most people don't treat their children that way. Right. And if thought about their feelings like an inner child, maybe they could start to realize how they're creating a lot of their own pain.
So it's not just the parents' ability to sit and listen, because they might not be able to do that. They might have such a deep-rooted pattern of disconnection that that isn't easy to retrain. But the individual, and maybe your parent is older and that's already happened, but we can take responsibility of our own ability to sit and listen. How much self-judgment am I in right now? How much self-criticism am I in right now? How much comparison am I in right now? And if you see that that's really high, how do you get out of that? Like, I'm really breaking this down with you. How do you then say, all right, stop self-judging, stop self-criticizing? You can't.
No, you can't just. First of all, you have to be aware of it. So noticing it is the first step. But then, you see, we judge ourselves because we have some false beliefs about what that's going to do. Like, I just worked with someone who's very harsh on herself. And she says, yeah, I got to beat myself up to motivate myself. She's been doing it her whole life, and it never motivated her.
Wow, yeah.
Operate out of these false beliefs. Yeah, if I'm harsh on myself and I beat myself up, then I'll get myself to do it right. And all that does is create anxiety and depression. And so we have to tune into these beliefs. Oh, I believe that judging myself will get me off the couch, get me to do things right, get me to be productive, get me to look like I'm okay in the world. And all it does is scare us and make us feel bad about ourselves. So we want to tune into what the beliefs are, because that's what's governing the behavior. Once we understand that, then I teach people how to open to a higher source of truth and love. And it's not as hard as people think. It's about when people are really open to learning about loving themselves. And they're also taking care of themselves physically. They're eating well so that their body is not, you know, right, at a low frequency, because we can't connect with our higher guidance when we're operating out of, you know, eating sugar and drinking and processed food. So I help people understand that if they want to access that guidance, they need to be eating well, treating their body well physically, and they need to be open to learning about love, about starting with loving themselves, being able to share their love with others. And surprisingly, when people really do that and they ask, like, well, is this true? They'll get answers like, no, that's not true. Just look at your life. You've been doing that forever, and all it's done is keep you stuck. They'll get those answers when they really ask. And if they ask what's loving to themselves, they're going to start to get answers. And this is, even if they don't believe there's anything there, ask anyway. Even if they just ask the air, just ask with a deep desire to learn. I've learned to do this all day long. I ask all day long, what's loving to me now? What's loving to put in my body? What's loving to spend my time? What's loving in this minute? And I get nonstop information about how to take loving care of myself. Everybody has that capacity if they open to learning about taking loving care of themselves.
So if someone is maybe experiencing, you know, the COVID-19, I'm talking about pounds that, you know, people have put on from staying sedentary for so long, and to release something like that, and I noticed that you wrote a book about this, and Beyond Junk Foods and Junk Thoughts, right, to At-Will Spiritual Connection, which is really, in the title of that, makes so much sense. The junk thoughts lead to the unconscious junk eating, mm-hmm, and that disconnects us from how it feels. Everyone's felt what it feels like to feel healthy and fit in your body, and how great it feels when you're active and exercising and releasing endorphins, even if it's just walking, and how great it feels to fit into your clothes without them being tight painfully. There's that feeling is always a good feeling. When anyone ever gets to that place of real health or losing weight or whatever they feel is their fittest or best self, it feels really good.
Yeah.
Yet that, I mean, we've seen yo-yo dieting for so long and all of that, it's all connected to these junk thoughts. Junk food is connected to junk thoughts.
Yeah, because when we're abandoning ourselves, this is what I call self-abandonment, when we're judging ourselves and we're ignoring our feelings and we're numbing out with addictions and we're making others responsible, we're abandoning ourselves. And that creates a feeling of aloneness and emptiness inside. Many people have learned to use food or alcohol or drugs or other addictions to fill up that emptiness. But what the emptiness is telling us is that there's no love inside. And people have used food for love or other things for love, shopping, spending for love. That's not love. Love is love. Food is food. They're not the same thing.
It's interesting because those addictions like the food or the shopping or the alcohol, whatever, does release these happy neurotransmitters. But
yeah,
they're different. So they're different, and they're not long lasting. They're very temporary, and they lead to a bigger dip at the end. So it's false. It's a false feeling of satisfaction. Right. And so what you're saying is, in that moment, to say to yourself, what was that phrase you used? How am I loving myself now? What did you say?
What would be loving to me now? What would be loving to me? What's in my highest good right now? What is this feeling part of me, this inner child, need from me right now to feel loved by me?
What would be loving to me now?
Right.
And so when you're in that place, and I do this too. I mean, you sit on Zoom for 8 to 12 hours a day, and you just get up to eat and sit back down for 8 more hours. And it's very, yeah, it's, even though I go exercise in the morning, I sit for 10 hours after that. It seems to reverse the effects of the exercise. So you're saying is this loving to me now? Maybe getting up and going on a little walk, walking around the driveway, doing whatever you can just to keep lovingness going will help you break the addiction to what's been, you know, that temporary soothing or comfort. Is that what you're saying to do?
Yes, because if people really notice, okay, you have a great meal and you feel full and that emptiness isn't there, how do you feel an hour later? You know, and it's the same thing with people. People want other people's approval. They want other people's love. So they get approval and it feels great. You know, okay, I'm okay because I've gotten approval. How long does that last? Then you got to keep doing it. You got to keep saying the right thing, doing the right thing to try and get somebody else's love, because you're not giving yourself the love. And this is what this is about. Love is what fills. Yeah. Love is what brings inner peace. Love is what makes us feel full inside. Now, I used to be a sugar addict. I mean, I was really a sugar addict. And I used willpower and everything to try and not do that because I knew it was bad. Once I started inner bonding and I started to really learn to bring love inside, which is what we need, all those addictions just went away. They went away naturally. My addiction to getting love, to trying to get approval. I was a caretaker. I was always trying to do everything right and take care of everybody else's feelings. All of that healed naturally because I was bringing to myself what I needed. And when you fill yourself up with love, then you have love to share with others. Mm-hmm. And that's the best feeling in the world. Yes. And so important to learn to love ourselves.
You really explain it in a different way, where those other things that we feel are self-soothing are just temporary. And that deep, deep love. So you said that that was the first step to the inner bonding process, learning to feel in the body and not in the head. What are the other steps?
Okay, the second step is being in your heart, opening to learning, consciously opening to learning, and inviting the love and compassion of our higher guidance into our heart. We don't generate love and compassion. We open to it. So we just say, I invite your love and compassion into my heart. We breathe that in, and that creates what we call the loving adult. We have to be open and curious and compassionate in order to truly learn. That's step two. And step three is that dialogue process where you're saying, well, how am I treating you? What am I telling you that's making you feel so bad? And we tune in. We have a dialogue and we tune in to how we're treating ourselves. And we go deeper to see why are we judging ourselves or whatever. And once we understand that, we go to step four, which is asking for the truth about any of the false beliefs from our higher self and asking for what's loving and staying open to receiving that. And then in step five, we do what's loving. Whatever we're guided to do, we do. This can be challenging because sometimes it's not easy, like maybe speaking up for yourself with a partner might feel scary. But unless we advocate for ourselves, we're going to continue to feel bad. And so once we actually take a loving action, and maybe it's just holding yourself, maybe it's just being present with yourself. There's so many loving actions we could take. But once we take it, then we tune in again in step six to see how we feel. And whatever, if we've taken a loving action, then we're going to feel relief. If we don't feel relief, we haven't taken a loving action. And then we go back and look at something else to do.
So. Now, how long does it take for people to adopt this process on their own? Does it help to go through like being guided around it? I know that you have a gift today for the fun drive that does help people really guide themselves through it. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
See, one of the things we have on our website, we have a free course that will introduce people to it. Some people can just learn to do it from that. Some people, if they download these ebooks, it's like the light bulbs will go on and they'll learn to do it from that. Other people who have deeper issues, they're going to need maybe some facilitation. We have many well-trained facilitators. I work with people and they all do. We have courses a course called Love Yourself, and many other courses that help people do it. So there's many ways to learn the process. And we try to offer people ways to learn it where they don't have to spend anything, because some people don't have the money. But if they want more, they can. Really, anybody can learn this, but it does take practice. It's not instant. What is instant is that the minute you start to take care of yourself, you're going to feel better. But you have to keep doing it, just like a child. You know, you don't say, oh, I spent 10 minutes with my child and they're feeling better, so now I don't have to pay any attention to them.
Right. It's an ongoing process. And we are offering this for our fund drive today. And you've got, we'll give the numbers at the end of the show. Also, you can see them on your screen if you're watching this. But there's so much that comes to this level of self-work and self-compassion, because we are very hard on ourselves. A lot of things have changed, and we're having to recreate, reinvent, pivot all the time. And I don't know a time in history where humanity had to keep pivoting and keep pivoting and keep pivoting. And yeah, I'm sure there have been, but it's a constant process that is out of our, feels out of our control. So if the one thing that you can do is start to stay a little bit more in your self-control, then those things around you don't feel so out of control. Now, identifying the false beliefs, what are those? Like, why are they false, and how do we identify them? Is it every belief?
No. So any belief that is limiting us, any belief that is causing us to act out in ways that hurt ourselves or others, those are false beliefs, because the truth doesn't hurt ourselves. The truth does not hurt others. And so when we're hurting, it means we're operating from a false belief. And those feelings like anxiety and depression, are letting us know that we're telling ourselves lies. Our ego wounded aspect absorbed all of these as we were growing up. For example, let's say that you were hit a lot as a child, or you were ridiculed a lot, or you were even sexually abused as a child. You're going to absorb a belief that you're not good, that you're bad, that it was your fault that these things happen. And we all absorb these in one way or another. And one of the reasons we do is because that gives us a feeling of control. Like if it's my fault, then I can do something about it. I can be good. I can be, I can get all A's. I can, you know, watch out for other people's feelings and figure out what to do. And so when we're kids, we want to have control. And the only way we can is to think that it's our fault because we're not good enough. And then we're going to try and do it right. But those are false beliefs. And we come into adulthood with those false beliefs, and we're still operating from them. And our painful feelings like anxiety, depression, guilt, shame, anger, aloneness, emptiness, jealousy, these are letting us know that we're operating from false beliefs. We're operating from lies. And so it's so important to be able to go in, see how we're treating ourselves, and then look at why are we doing it? What are the beliefs that are causing us to treat ourselves in these unloving ways? And then it's so important to be able to access our higher truth and say, well, what really is true?
You know, I had someone tell me the other day that they were born with depression, that it's genetic. Is that a thing? Is that true?
I have never seen that to be true. What happens to some people is that they may even decide in the womb that, well, for example, they might not be wanted. Maybe their parent didn't want them. Maybe their parent was depressed. Maybe their parent was anxious. They could have absorbed that. Sometimes kids do absorb their parents' feelings in the womb. I've worked with people who they somehow like recognize it wasn't really theirs, but they didn't know what to do with it. And once they realized they had absorbed their mother's anxiety or depression, they were able to start to heal that. But that's not what we're born with genetically. There are ways we absorb that.
Interesting. So when they say genetic, it's really the feeling that they felt either not being wanted, or if the parent was grappling with depression, they felt that feeling. But
and you know, I think the research does show that there's kind of a set point for happiness, and some people are born just happier than others. But that doesn't mean that they can't choose to learn about what's loving to themselves. I mean, I work with people who've been miserable their whole life.
Right, right. And feel like they came out of the womb that way. And maybe they have a lower production of serotonin. Maybe they do. But there are also natural ways to stimulate that serotonin. And, you know, exercise is one of the ways because of the endorphins. Although it's temporary during the time of exercise, it can really continue on if you do it enough. So right. It doesn't necessarily have to be through chemicals and drugs and so forth. Yeah.
No, it doesn't. But the other thing is with anxiety and depression is that a lot of it comes from the gut, because if people are eating really badly, they're eating a lot of sugar and processed foods, junk food, then their gut is out of balance. And when the gut is out of balance, it produces toxins. Those toxins not only go into the body, but they come up the vagus nerve into the brain. And it's been shown that those toxins create anxiety and depression. So it's not exactly true that it's a brain imbalance. It's a gut imbalance.
And gut imbalance. What about hormonal imbalance? Because a lot of women deal with this during menopause and so forth. Could it be physically a hormonal imbalance?
Yes, it can be. But again, see, because we're mind, body, and spirit, that the hormones can be affected by a bad diet. Like they're eating badly, their hormones are out of whack because their gut balance is out of whack. And then that can be causing those feelings. So we can't separate it out. It's, you know, we need to be paying attention to how we're treating our body, what's going on with our minds, whether or not we're taking emotional responsibility, and learning to connect on the spiritual level to bring that love and comfort in. So it's not just an isolated thing. You know, allopathic medicine has isolated, you know, there's the brain doctor and the heart doctor and all that, but functional medicine doesn't do that. It treats us as a whole person. And that's what your bonding does too.
That's fascinating. So it's really is mind, body, spirit from the root cause of it. And so it just starts with listening to yourself. That's all. Well, it's a good beginning.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you're listening, if you're tuned into your feelings, let's say you're tuned in and you feel depressed, then you can start to explore what's going on. Is it because of what you're telling yourself? See, that book that you mentioned, it's called Diet for Divine Connection, Beyond Junk Food and Junk Thoughts to At-Will Spiritual Connection. It's not one thing. When we tune into, let's say, feeling depressed, then we can explore, is our gut out of balance? Is that causing it? Are we treating ourselves badly? Is that causing it? Is there childhood abuse that we've never dealt with? Is that causing it? There's multiple causes, but we can do something about all of them if we're open, to learning and tuning in, instead of turning to all these self-abandoning addictions that we've learned to do. Then we have choices of how we treat ourselves on all these levels.
You know, I've always heard that dieting has nothing to do with willpower. Willpower is the first thing that will fail you. And when you tell yourself, I'm not going to eat, and then the stressful emotion comes up, or that need for comfort arises, and all that willpower just goes out the window. It's the first thing to leave.
That's right, because people don't know how to manage their feelings. You see, they don't know how to bring love and compassion. Our feelings need love and compassion. And we don't, like I said, we don't generate that. We open to it. And when we can bring that to our feelings, like you know, with your daughter, like if she was, you know, when she was a child and she was hurting, didn't you hold her with love and compassion?
Absolutely. And I still do.
That's right. And that helped her to metabolize her feelings, to process them, to move through them. But people don't learn to do that for themselves.
Oh.
It is what they need to learn to do.
You know, it's definitely a big, huge problem with our younger communities as well, with our teenagers, because so much emphasis is put on the external through the social media, through, I'm feeling great, look at me, you know, and all these great things. And they have such an emphasis on that person's doing great, I'm not. And right. that person looks great, I don't. And I have to post it, even though I'm feeling miserable inside, I need to do kissy face and, you know, peace signs because it's what's popular. And it's a very dangerous mentality to be raised with, the external gratification, extremely dangerous. There's yes. a whole segment of our population that is being raised with social media, and it is going to be very shallow when the 30s and 40s hit, when you really are forced to look inside and find out what you're made of in order to keep going in your life.
Yeah, and I think it's so fortunate when young people decide to start to deal with that. I do work with people 15, 18, early 20s who just don't like that anymore, and they really want to feel better, and they're open to learning to bring joy to themselves, to learn to love themselves, to value who they are. And it's so exciting to me when young people are open to that.
Yes, it is. It's sometimes they're not even aware of it, though, and I don't mean to make anyone wrong at all, but it's one of those self-soothing things too. The comfort thing is scrolling through the social media. It gets right inside of the subconscious mind, and most are not aware of it.
Yeah, but the thing is that as parents, we're role models. And when we role model taking responsibility for our own feelings, and we show up as loving adults for our kids, they kind of learn to absorb that. And they're not as likely to adopt the values of who they are is external when they're really feeling the love of their parents. They're feeling their parents loving and valuing themselves. They experience their parents seeing who they really are on the inner level, their goodness, their sweetness, their creativity, their aliveness, their passion, all the internal qualities. When parents are able to see that and mirror that and value that in their kids, kids start to value that in themselves, and they become much more immune to the external. Like my granddaughter, who's 14, she just says to me, you know, those kids just think that they're how they look. Why don't they get that they're not? I'm so proud of her for knowing that.
Yeah, it is a really good thing to have awareness about. But we also do it as adults. You're right. We mirror that for our children. So I'm just going to, this is a very simple technique, and it's takes constant reminding, is asking yourself in the moment when you want to reach for that thing, whatever it is, if it's social media, if it's food, if it's whatever that addiction is, and you ask yourself, I have to write this down. What is the question you're asking yourself?
What's the thing to me? What is in my highest good? What is loving to me right now?
What is loving to me right now? Okay. And that's why I keep asking you, okay, I'm going to ask myself, what is loving to me right now? And some answers that you could get are maybe a walk or water or a nap or calling a friend or anything like that, right?
Anything like that other than suppressing your feelings. Or it might be just breathe in, just hold yourself, just be kind to yourself right now. See, and the other thing about this process is that it creates physical health as well. When we're really asking what's loving to ourselves, we are not going to be hurting our bodies. And this is one of the things that I want people to know. I often tell people my age, which I'm 81, and
wow.
I have amazing health, amazing vitality, clarity. I work umpteen hours, you know, every day. And I want people to know that when you feed yourself well and you take care of your feelings and you get enough exercise, you don't have to get old and decrepit. It just doesn't need to happen.
Yes. One of the callers that called in the other day, she looked maybe like later 60s. She had her hair dyed purple, and she was great because she was saying, I really feel, she felt old and she felt lonely. And she specifically said that, but, you know, it's been a long time and she's, you know, single and she's alone and there's no one there at night, and she can go through days and days like that.
Yeah.
And it's a challenge for her to see what would be loving for her in that moment.
Right.
So when someone is constantly around that reminder of loneliness, maybe they've lost a spouse or something, how do you find what is loving to you if nothing is appearing to be loving to you right at that moment?
Yeah, but see, again, she's focused on something external, like she has to have a spouse or something there. Love, like I said, love is spirit. And when we learn to bring that love into ourselves, then we're going to get filled up. We're going to feel not alone inside. There's a difference between aloneness and loneliness. Aloneness is when we've abandoned ourselves. We feel empty inside. Loneliness is when we're not connected to others. But we're always going to feel both alone and lonely when we're abandoning ourselves. So when somebody learns to say, what's loving to me right now, and take loving care of themselves, then they might, you know, on Zoom or something during COVID, reach out to a friend or find a way to help somebody else. That's a great way to love ourselves. We always feel good when we help somebody else. And there's so many ways of doing that. People think it's all about what they get. But, you know, when they're really loving themselves and they get filled with love, they just want to give. And it's so satisfying to do that.
That is so true. That is an immediate way to feel better, is when you help somebody else. That's or great. Share what you've learned, or have a support group or something where you get to share your, you know, little mini wins for the day. And I have seen people's lives completely change by just doing that, by helping other people, no matter what's going on. I have a friend whose husband had a tragic accident, and he was everything to the family. He was, you know, the breadwinner, and he had his own company and everything. And the company was all about him. So when he got in the accident, there was no backup plan. And the wife and daughter, she used to be a grief counselor. And what she's done, although now she's turned into his caregiver because he's kind of in a definitely a compromised state, and she's his caregiver. And what she's done for herself is join charity groups and start volunteering.
Right.
Even though you wouldn't think she'd have the time to do it, or she'd have, you know, she needs to find an actual job to pay her money. But this is the most fulfilling thing to her right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah. Yeah. And I've seen her cope with a lot this last year. And it's amazing how those little things, like writing a note to someone, can help. It really helps take you a very long way. So
that's right.
I appreciate you saying that. So tell me a little bit about the ebook. And I know that we have a wonderful opportunity for our audience to be able to contribute to this station, which, talking about giving, this is definitely about giving. We have a station here who has the need for support and the need for funds, because it's a public station and it is also commercial free, which is one of the things that it doesn't do, is accept commercial income and so forth, so that we can really keep the messages clear and clean. And we rely on the support of people to be able to donate to the station. So you have two ebooks that, as people call today and contribute to the station, they're going to get as a thank you gift. Tell us about them.
Yeah. So the first one is Three Mistakes. Oh, did you have the titles there? I think it's Four Mistakes.
Yep.
That block self-love and loving others. And so this would be a very powerful book for people to understand what they're doing that blocks their ability to love.
Okay.
And then the other one there again.
It's Six Secrets to Profound Self-Love and Joyous Connection.
Right.
So one is finding the blocks, and
right,
one is moving towards that profound self-love.
So both of these books will be extremely helpful to people in learning this process and understanding how they're stopping love from coming into themselves and sharing it with others.
Okay, so the phone number to call is 818-985-KPFK, 818-985-KPFK. And the reason that we have, you know, incredible guests like Dr. Margaret Paul on is so she can share her wisdom and help us in these places where we feel that there were a victim of our own loneliness or our own habits or patterns. And what Dr. Margaret is saying is that it is possible to unlock those, and you don't have to live locked in your mind with them. It's, I'm sure you've seen this over 38 years with people really get a certain sense of emotional freedom from just following these super simple steps. And no one has to do them for you. You do them yourself constantly. And then you share them with others, which is the icing on the cake. So one of them is four secrets that block self-love and relationships. And the other one is 6 secrets to profound self-love and joyous connection. When I'm really sharing about giving to someone else as an altruistic effect of helping yourself, what I really mean, and I know you've experienced this, is when you start to share with someone else what you've learned, it brings a certain joy or information to someone else. It helps you feel so much better. And that's what we've always done with the Aware Show. It brings me so much joy to share information like I have done today with Dr. Margaret Paul with others. And if you share that with other people, it helps you learn it even more. And so it's a wonderful feeling to be able to share it. And also, when you share with our wonderful network here at WBAI and support this network, it also helps us continue to share information with other people. We are in our fund drive right now with WBAI. And as always, you can give us a call at 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. And you can donate a $50 donation to the station, and you will get 2 ebooks from Dr. Margaret Paul. One of them is The Secrets That Block Self-Love and Relationships, and the other one is The Secrets to Profound Self-Love. What we've been talking about here is this inner bonding process, and it's a very powerful, simple program that helps you with the roadmap of learning to love yourself. And it starts with taking responsibility and accountability for those feelings that are self-criticizing, dealing with self-judgment, dealing with comparison, and helping you feel that you're comparing yourself to others or even being jealous of other people. Those feelings, when you start to really self-criticize yourself, are what are directly linked to anxiety and depression and guilt and shame and anger. And that leads to addictions, unconscious eating, alcohol, drugs, shopping, anything that you feel that will soothe you. But it's a very temporary fix. And that soothing will go back to the same cycle. Why did I do that? The self-judgment, the self-criticism that then leads to the depression, anxiety, and the self-soothing. It's a vicious cycle. And all you can do right now is you can take responsibility for when those feelings of self-criticism come up, notice them. Dr. Margaret Paul was saying that she just started noticing, and weeks of just noticing the thought. And eventually, that noticing went to a place of stopping the thought. And eventually that noticing and then stopping led to feelings of what is loving to me right now? How do I break that limiting belief there, that false belief, and do something that is loving to myself right now? And this is the step-by-step process that you're going to get in the ebooks that really will help you identify the false limiting beliefs that lead to the anxiety and depression and find a way to turn those into self-loving, caring, valuing thoughts. Your whole life will change as a result of this. And it's something that is so self-empowering that you can do and that you can change forever. So please give us a call. And the number again for WBAI is 212-209-2950. Or you can go to give2wbai.org. That's give2wbai.org. Now, Dr. Margaret Paul, who is a has a PhD in psychology. She has been a relationship expert for 35 years, and she has helped people find this pathway to self-love and to self-value and to connection with themselves. And it helps so much to be able to bring in those feelings that you change your work environment, you change your relationships, you change your relationship with food, you change your body, you change self-image, you change everything. So again, just give us a call here. And if you can donate $50, you go to the website, which is give2wbai.org, or call us 212-209-2950. And you would ask for the Dr. Margaret Paul. And it is a ebook. There are two ebooks here. One is The Secrets That Block Self-Love and Relationships. And the other one is Six Secrets to Profound Self-Love and Joyous Connection. And again, it's a $50 donation. And one of those things that you have maybe been experiencing during this pandemic is feelings of loneliness, or feelings of being alone, and feelings of emptiness. And Dr. Margaret Paul said that all of that can shift when you start shifting and switching to these feelings of what's loving to myself right now. Then you start to seek and find things that really help you with that feeling of self-love, with that feeling of self-value. And when you value yourself, guess what happens? You start to attract more of the same. It is the simple law of attraction. If you call what you think about grows, what you know grows. There's so many different ways that we've learned this from so many different personal development experts over time. And that's exactly it. You will repattern the neural pathway towards self-love. You will implode the patterns of the false beliefs and the self-criticism just simply by noticing, stopping, and replacing with feelings of what is loving to myself right now. I know that it's not intuitive, because it's something that we were conditioned or growing up thinking that we had to be self-critical to be better, or be a perfectionist, or control our environment, or whatever those feelings were, especially now with the social media where there's so much self-comparison going on with other people that appear to be happier or appear to be thinner or appear to be wealthier. It's such a trap. And what you want to do is be able to empower yourself to switch your mind, to notice when that self-criticism happens, to stop that self-criticism and judgment, to replace it with what is healthy or what feels good to yourself and what's loving in that moment that's going to continue to last, and then you'll create more of the same. It sounds simple, but it is practice. Practice, 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 which is why the ebooks are really helpful. So you can do it in a workbook style, and you can learn on a deeper level how to repattern your brain. Again, the phone number at WBAI is 212-209-2950, or you can go to the website, which is give2wbai.org. And it's so important during this time of pivoting, of transitioning, whatever you're doing, to be able to learn to love yourself first. And the phone number again, 212-209-2950. And we really do appreciate your support. It's something that we've always needed here at WBAI. We have stayed on the air because of you. We know that your support makes a huge difference. On the Aware Show, we particularly like to turn around and give you tools to be able to empower and support yourself. And that's kind of the give back that we have here. So you listen, you give to the station, and we give right back to you something that's going to last a very long time. When you really change these patterns in your life, it will make a huge difference. Also, if you listen to podcasts, and if you like podcasts, then you can always listen to the Aware Show podcast on demand at any time, wherever you are. And this show is on there, so you can listen to this and share it with friends. If it's made a difference in your life, if you're finding, if you know someone who's typically depressed or having a really hard time right now, you can share that with them as well. Feelings of how to bring out that attention of the self-limiting and self-criticizing thoughts, how to stop them, and by noticing them, stopping them, and then asking yourself, what is loving for me right now? Have an accountability partner. Share the podcast with them and say, hey, I found this really cool thing. And if you can also have, maybe they can support WBAI as well and give a $50 donation and get the ebooks. It's all for you, and we appreciate you, and we appreciate your support, and we appreciate you loving yourself. That's the whole point. The website, if you're online listening, you can go to the website, which is give2wbai.org, or the phone number, which is 212-209-2950. And I have said this many, many times before, but we appreciate your love. We appreciate your financial support. We appreciate you being here and being a part of the WBAI family. You are the people that make this station stay on the air. We've seen that over the years. You have supported us with your voices. You've supported us by telling us what you like to hear on the station, and we love to give you more of the same. This is one of those types of networks where you, what you put in is what you get out. And that's the whole idea behind public radio, is that you can contribute to the station and you can make an impact on what you get out of this particular station. And it creates an amazing community as well. So be a part of the WBAI community. You can also look on there what it means to be a WBAI buddy. And that means you can be in a constant level of support. It's, if it's $5, $10 a month, and support our station, we really appreciate that as well. So ask about being a WBAI buddy, and you can go to the website, and it'll show that to you right there, which is give2wbai.org, or the volunteers in the phone room will tell you all about it, 212-209-2950. Thank you so much for being a part of the Aware Show. I'm Lisa Garr, and until next time, I invite you to stay aware.
Staying healthy and avoiding things in the environment that can be harmful to you and your family, the world can be a confusing place. Hi, I'm Patty Wood from Green Street, and every Tuesday morning, Doug and I will sort it out for you, calling out the bad actors, bringing you insightful interviews with experts, and sharing our own views on the issues of the day. So tune in to Green Street every Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock, right here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, and streaming around the world at WBAI.org.
Did you know that if you brush your teeth with your right hand and then you switch to your left hand, it can help your brain? That tip and others are presented on WBAI Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. on May 4th when we bring you a forum presented by the Alzheimer's Foundation of America for New York vets and your families. Did you know that based on military experience, vets may be at a higher risk for dementia? The risk also increases with age. That's Tuesday, May 4th from 11 to 12 p.m. You'll receive info on brain health memory screenings and veteran benefits. May 4th at 11 a.m. presented on WBAI in cooperation with the Alzheimer's Foundation of America.
Extinction Diaries. Zebras are starting to be born with strange spots or patterns not normal to them. Scientists believe this is likely from inbreeding. Research has revealed that most animals higher up on the evolutionary chain are instinctively not drawn to mate with a close relative. However, species suffering reduced numbers such as low as a dozen or herds with geographical constraints have no choice but to mate with a relative close enough to create genetic damage. Aberrations not related to inbreeding, like melanin mutation that alters pigment, are rare among mammals. So biologists are concerned that 5% or more of zebras around a Ugandan lake are striped abnormally. Habitat fragmentation is preventing regional herds from migrating, and some smaller groups are literally boxed in without any unrelated genetics. There are approximately 1.5 million wild zebras, and though that's not great, there remains significant genetic diversity overall. The problem now is likely specific groups finding themselves cut off from their distant relatives. My name is Aaron Oliveira, and this is a Small World Radio production.
Hey, this is Shaka Khan, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Whoa, whoa, whoa.